Iran signals openness to U.S. peace talks despite major rifts remaining. And number 10,022, takeaways by Plaquemium AI Hyde, and number 9,650, Pakistan and hashtag X27's Army Chief Asim Munir arrived in Tehran on Friday for late-night talks with Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, signaling significant progress in U.S.-Iran negotiations. The U.S.-Iran negotiations have kept the Strait of Hormuz partially closed since a February 28 U.S.-Israeli strike on Iran, with Washington now preparing military contingencies. Iranian Foreign Minister Araghchi has conducted multilateral diplomatic outreach, including phone calls with Turkish, Iraqi, Qatari, Omani counterparts and UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres. The U.S.-Iran negotiations that have kept the Strait of Hormuz partially closed since a February 28 U.S.-Israeli strike on Iran are now at a decision point, with Washington preparing military contingencies and Tehran signaling its UN mission that American demands have crossed a threshold it may not accept. Pakistan's Army Chief Asim Munir arrived in Tehran on Friday and held late-night talks with Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, a visit that Al Jazeera's Tehran correspondent Rizal Sardarat has described as itself a sign of significant progress in the negotiations. Munir's arrival follows weeks of multilateral diplomatic activity. Araghchi has held phone calls with his Turkish, Iraqi, Qatari, and Omani counterparts, as well as with UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres. Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif and Foreign Minister Ishaq Dar traveled to China, Iran's top trading partner, for a four-day visit in which the crisis is expected to feature prominently, according to Al Jazeera. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Esmoil Baghiyi told Iran's ISNA news agency that Munir's arrival did not indicate we have reached a turning point or a decisive situation, citing deep and significant disagreements that remain unresolved. Iran's UN mission has separately accused Washington of excessive demands that are pushing talks toward collapse, while President Donald Trump described this week's negotiations as on the borderline between renewed attacks and a deal. The Strait of Hormuz closure, now in its third month since a ceasefire on April 8, has produced a worsening oil supply crisis that has reverberated across global markets, central bank policy, and supply chains in ways that institutional investors cannot price off a single scenario. Hormuz as a financial variable. What the closure has already moved the Strait of Hormuz is not a geopolitical abstraction. Approximately 20% of globally traded oil transits the waterway under normal conditions. Its continued partial closure since the February 28 strikes represents one of the most significant supply-side shocks to energy markets in decades. The Federal Reserve's response to this disruption is now documented. The Fed held its benchmark rate at between 3.5% and 3.75% in April, with economists now forecasting no cuts for the remainder of 2026, according to the BBC. The central bank has explicitly cited the U.S.-Israel war on Iran as a factor complicating its inflation outlook, a reversal from earlier expectations of rate reductions that had been baked into equity and credit valuations across institutional portfolios. Kevin Warsh, sworn in as Fed chair by President Trump at the White House on Friday in the first such ceremony held at the building since Alan Greenspan's swearing in 1987, enters his tenure in this environment. Trump urged Warsh to let the economy boom and said the Fed had lost its way under his predecessor Jerome Powell. The political pressure on monetary policy is real. The Hormuz closure is the single largest variable determining whether Warsh's room to maneuver expands or contracts in his opening months. Key macro linkage: the Fed rate held at 3.5% to 3.75% as of April 2026, with economists forecasting no cuts through year-end. The Hormuz closure is cited by the central bank as a direct inflation complication. A reopening would be the most immediate catalyst for a Fed pivot. Pakistan's mediation architecture and why Beijing is the third party that matters. The diplomatic structure now visible around the Iran-US talks is not bilateral. It is a web. Pakistan occupies the most operationally active node. Munir flew to Tehran while Prime Minister Sharif and Foreign Minister Dar simultaneously visited China, Iran's top trading partner. This dual-track positioning by Islamabad is deliberate. Pakistan hosted the historic face-to-face Iran-US talks in Islamabad referenced in Al Jazeera's reporting. That Sharif and Dar are now in Beijing while Munir is in Tehran signals that Pakistan is coordinating not just between Washington and Tehran, but between Tehran and Beijing. China's economic relationship with Iran gives it leverage over Iranian decision-making that no Western interlocutor can match. Our view, the fact that Beijing is being briefed in real time, via Pakistan's highest political leadership, on the state of the negotiations means any deal's durability depends partly on Chinese endorsement of the economic framework that follows. Institutional capital assessing a post-deal Iran reopening scenario must model Chinese infrastructure and energy investment returning to Iran faster than Western capital, not the reverse. The Q matters for Alpha. The Mercosur signal, geopolitical disruption creates trade winners elsewhere while the Hormuz closure dominates energy headlines, parallel trade realignments are accelerating in the Southern Cone, and the data is specific. Uruguay this week captured 63% of the annual zero-tariff rice quota granted by the European Union to Mercosur, filling the allocation within weeks of the Mercosur-EU Association Agreement, entering provisional force on May 1, 2026. The total quota stands at 6,667 tons for the current year, according to Acting Foreign Minister Valeria Siasukasi. Uruguayan President Yamandu Orsi credited the country's productive sector directly. Former President of the Rice Growers Association Alfredo Lago has identified Uruguay's compliance with EU sanitary requirements as the decisive competitive advantage, noting that Uruguay is the only Mercosur partner whose rice production fully meets EU standards. The commercial math here is concrete. Uruguay's rice sector historically accounts for more than 50% of Mercosur rice exports, with an annual flow of close to 200,000 tons. Uruguayan rice exporters paid approximately $10 million in tariffs in 2023. The new agreement removes that burden progressively, with the quota expanding from 6,667 tons currently to 60,000 tons annually within 5 years in increments of 10,000 tons per year. Caption: EU Mercosur rice quota parameters and Uruguay's early capture data as of May 23, 2026. What this signals: trade corridors that bypass the Hormuz-linked energy disruption are attracting accelerating capital attention. Agricultural exporters in Mercosur, particularly those with certified supply chains meeting EU standards, represent a direct beneficiary of the geopolitical volatility centered on the Middle East. When energy supply chains destabilize, food and agricultural trade flows become relatively more valuable to importing blocs like the EU. European defense rearmament, the institutional opportunity running in parallel separate from the Iran negotiations but directly shaped by the post-2022 European security architecture, Sweden this week signed a deal to purchase four French FDI frigates from Naval Group at an estimated cost of just over 10 billion Swedish crowns per vessel, for a likely total exceeding 3.5 billion euros, according to Merco Press. Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson called it the country's biggest military investment since Sweden introduced its Gripen fighter planes in the 1980s. Sweden aims to reach defense spending of 3.5% of GDP by 2030, ahead of NATO's own targets. The first delivery is expected by 2030, with the remaining three frigates following by 2035. Kristersson described the acquisition as a tripling of Sweden's air defense capability compared with today. The deal came after the Swedish military analyzed three rival bids, with Naval Group winning over Spain's Navantia and a joint bid from Britain's Babcock and Sweden's Saab. The geopolitical arc from Tehran to Stockholm is not metaphorical. The prolonged US-Iran confrontation has reinforced European NATO members' conviction that their own defense procurement cannot wait. Every week the Hormuz crisis continues adds urgency to European rearmament timelines and expands the addressable market for defense industrial capital. Defense procurement signal: Sweden's frigate deal, at an estimated total exceeding 3.5 billion euros, is the country's largest military investment since the 1980s. European NATO members are accelerating procurement on timelines driven partly by Middle East instability and the perceived US reliability premium narrowing. Investment positioning: four trades embedded in one geopolitical inflection. The Iran-US negotiation is not one trade. It is at minimum four. Energy long/short, a confirmed Hormuz reopening triggers a supply-side release that would pressure Brent and WTI. Positions long on Middle East disruption premium need a defined exit trigger. Munir's arrival in Tehran is not that trigger. Baghi's language, citing deep and significant disagreements, is the more relevant data point. Terms were not disclosed and no timeline for resolution is public. Rates: the Fed's decision to hold at 3.5% to 3.75% is explicitly tied to war-driven inflation uncertainty. A durable Hormuz deal creates conditions for Warsh to begin a rate cycle that Trump has already publicly demanded. Duration positioning in U.S. fixed income should model this scenario as the primary bull case for a 2026 rate cut. Mercosur Agricultural: Uruguay's EU quota capture is a first-mover signal. The FIFO quota distribution system currently governing EU Mercosur-sensitive products creates a race-to-register dynamic. Beef quotas, which Uruguayan officials identify as the most economically significant, remain pending. Agricultural processing and export infrastructure in Uruguay represents a specific, bounded opportunity with a five-year contractual demand curve. European defense, Naval Group, Saab, and the broader European defense industrial complex are running on procurement tailwinds that are structurally multi-year regardless of the Iran outcome. Sweden's frigate deal closing in 2026 at a total exceeding 3.5 billion euros is one data point in a continent-wide rearmament cycle. The Plaquemines view the market is pricing the Iran-US negotiation as a binary, deal or escalation. That framing misses the more durable investment thesis embedded in the current structure. What Plaquemines sees, a prolonged no-deal, no-war equilibrium is the most underpriced scenario. Baghaei's language is carefully calibrated. Iran's UN mission is issuing escalatory statements while Arachi simultaneously holds calls with five regional foreign ministers and the UN Secretary General. This is not the behavior of a party preparing to walk away. It is the behavior of a party managing domestic political constraints while keeping the channel open. The implication for institutional capital is specific. A protracted semi-closure of Hormuz, lasting quarters rather than weeks, creates a structurally elevated energy price floor that reshapes three things simultaneously. It extends the Fed's hold period, accelerating the case for duration caution in fixed income. It increases the relative competitiveness of non-Middle Eastern energy sources, benefiting producers in the Americas and Norway, and it compresses the risk premium available for re-entry into Gulf-linked infrastructure once a deal eventually closes. The second-order play is Pakistan. Islamabad has positioned itself as the indispensable mediator between Washington, Tehran, and Beijing. That role has a price. Pakistan's economic situation has been fragile by any measure in recent years. A successful mediation outcome converts Pakistani diplomatic capital into concrete economic consideration, whether through debt relief, investment facilitation, or preferential trade terms. Institutional capital with frontier market exposure to Pakistan should be tracking this negotiation as a catalyst, not merely as context. The Mercosur agricultural data point is not a footnote. It is the leading edge of a structural shift in global food trade routing that the Hormuz crisis has accelerated. EU importers are diversifying away from supply chains that transit contested waterways. Uruguay's sanitary compliance advantage, confirmed by Lagos analysis, means it captures disproportionate quota even under a neutral allocation system. That advantage compounds as the quota grows to 60,000 tons annually within 5 years. The bottom line: Iran and the United States are negotiating, but the deep and significant disagreements cited by Tehran's foreign ministry on May 23 indicate no resolution is imminent. The Hormuz closure, now in its third month post-ceasefire, has already moved the Fed's rate trajectory, European defense procurement timelines, and agricultural trade flows in ways that are institutionally material and largely underweighted in current consensus positioning. The actionable call: do not wait for the binary. The prolonged partial closure is itself the scenario. Position accordingly across energy duration, U.S. rates, Mercosur agricultural infrastructure, and European defense industrial. The deal, when it eventually comes, will be a catalyst. The closed strait, right now, is the trade.